Today, Israel warns thousands of civilians to leave Rafah. Chinese President Xi Jinping visits Europe. Chad turns to the ballot box after years of military rule. And Italy's white-collar mafia is making a business killing. It's Monday, May 6th. This is Reuters World News, bringing you everything you need to know from the front lines in 10 minutes, every weekday. I'm Carmel Crimmins in Dublin. Israel's military is calling on Palestinian civilians to evacuate Rafah. It says the evacuation is part of a, quote, limited scope operation. Dan Williams is in Jerusalem. Dan, how significant is this evacuation order? Is this the start of the ground assault on Rafah?
This is significant. It could also be symbolic. Israel is referring to this as a localized limited operation. It's talking about 100,000 civilians who have been urged to leave for now. That obviously is a fraction of those in Rafah. However, we will know in the coming hours and days whether this is an expanded evacuation operation and indeed whether what follows is a ground incursion. There is also the possibility that this is intended to signal seriousness to the United States, to Qatar, and to Egypt, which have been mediating a new round of truce talks between Israel and Hamas. Hamas and Israel are at loggerheads over core positions, but it could well be that Israel is signaling to Hamas and to the mediators that in the absence of productive indirect diplomacy, it is ready to move on Rafah and move on the thousands of Hamas fighters that it says are holed up there, and potentially even to rescue or recover the dozens of hostages that it believes may be held there as well.
Panama's former security minister, José Raúl Molino, claiming victory in presidential elections. Molino says his government will be pro-investment and pro-business. Mexican authorities say three tourists from Australia and the United States who went missing in northern Mexico last week are dead. The bodies of the three surfers were found at the bottom of a well in Baja California State. The death toll from flooding in Kenya has risen to 228. Torrential rains have caused widespread flooding and landslides across the country and are forecast to worsen this month. In Italy, the mafia is known for its history of violence. But these days, it rarely bloodies its hands. Instead, mobsters have moved into the low-key, low-risk world of white-collar crime. Emilio Parodi is in Milan. Emilio, you've spoken to Italian prosecutors. What sort of crimes are they talking about?
Yeah, we are essentially talking about fiscal crimes such as the mass production of false invoices, or rather invoices for non-existent transactions, and then fraudulent bankruptcies and the exploitation of workers. When you think of mafias, you don't have to think of the Godfather movie. Instead, you have to think of business organizations that adapt to market demands.
How does this work?
Maybe it could be useful to refer to one of the examples we found for our story. There is, for instance, the case of a famous Michelin-starred restaurant in Milan that was on the top floor of a prestigious skyscraper, whose owner was struggling to pay the rent. So the Calabrian mafia, the so-called 'Ndrangheta, took over the restaurant by lending money and taking over the shares of the restaurant through a frontman. After that, the mafia ran the restaurant for a couple of years, taking all the revenues without paying taxes, and then put it out of business.
Is this changing the image of the mafia?
Yeah. The Milan prosecutor Alessandra Dolci told us that Italy is a country where there is no strong social stigma for those who do not pay taxes and commit tax crimes or white-collar crimes, while there is obviously a very strong stigma for drug trafficking or violent crimes. And this helped the Italian mafia to live better in this environment.
Speaking of the criminal underworld, if you haven't already had a chance, you should check out our weekend episode on how Balkan gangsters have become Europe's top cocaine suppliers. There's a link in the description of today's pod. Chad votes today in the first presidential election in Africa's Sahel region since a wave of coups. Mahamat Idriss Déby is seeking to transform himself from a junta leader to a civilian president. The vote coincides with the temporary withdrawal of US troops from Chad and a growing Russian presence in the region. Russian soldiers recently deployed to an airbase in neighboring Niger, which hosts US troops. Bate Felix is our West Africa bureau chief. Bate, why is this election so important?
Everyone is watching what will be the outcome. Will the military ruler who seized power and promised to hand over power back to an elected leader, he promised not to stay on in power, but he has broken all of that, those promises. He has decided to be a candidate and is very much likely to win. So everyone is watching to see what happens. Is it going to be a free and fair election? And if he loses to an opposition candidate, will he accept the results? And if it's not a free and fair election, will the opposition accept it?
Why is this vote being watched so closely internationally?
So Chad is a key country in the global fight against Islamic insurgencies in the region. It deploys troops into Mali when northern Mali was occupied, and most Western countries saw it as a key ally from where they could base their troops and carry out operations in the region. So this is why Chad is central in all of this.
Chinese President Xi Jinping is in Paris. It's his first visit to Europe in 5 years, and he's got an eye-catching itinerary, with trips to Russia-friendly Serbia and Hungary after France. Rachel Armstrong is our Europe editor. Rachel, where does the bloc stand on China?
Europe's position on China right now is pretty much can't live with them, can't live without them. The EU is investigating China allegedly flooding Europe with cheap subsidized electric vehicles and wind turbines, and says that European companies can't compete on a level playing field inside China due to subsidies and access rules. That's a message that is probably shared by France. Germany, however, is seen as taking a more nuanced position. It perhaps wants to find a way for German auto manufacturers to compete in China. And to do that, it is being accused by some officials in Brussels of perhaps looking to water down some of the EU probe in exchange for perhaps securing a better deal for its own car makers.
How might Xi take advantage of this split?
We know that Beijing is very unhappy with the EU's stance on China and its subsidies, so he will certainly be keen to address that, and he will prefer to address that individually with country leaders. He is seen by many analysts as having very much a divide and conquer agenda here.
And what message is Xi sending with his trips to Belgrade and Budapest?
Xi's stops in Serbia and Hungary are pretty fascinating. He's not going to Britain, Italy, Spain, Poland, any of the other major economies. He is instead stopping in the two countries that are seen as having the closest ties to Russia in all of Europe. So Xi may have particularly pointed messages to Hungarian leader Viktor Orban, whether that's on perhaps possible EU sanctions alleging China's support for Russia in the war with Ukraine, or whether he thinks he can play a role in helping to water down the EU probe. Then in Serbia, Serbia is perhaps at a crossroads. Does it look west and try and go for EU membership, NATO membership? Or does it perhaps look more towards Moscow and Beijing? And Xi may be keen to stress that the path to prosperity doesn't necessarily lie to the west.
And while France lays out the red carpet for President Xi, elsewhere in Paris, there are celebrations of a different kind.
I can confirm that this attempt has been successful.
French chefs have baked their way back into the record books with the world's longest baguette. The 461-foot-long loaf, reclaiming the title for France, from Italy. To beat the Italians, they began kneading and shaping the dough at 3 a.m., before putting it in a specially built, slow-moving oven on wheels. Baker Michel Dos Santos says it was a tense process.
Il a fallu la surveiller sur toute la longueur, ce qui est pas évident.
That's it for Monday. We'll be back tomorrow with our daily headline show. To make sure you never miss an update, subscribe on your favorite podcast player or download the Reuters app.